SBS Radio.
Scathing report reveals gross violations of human rights in Victoria's juvenile detention system. Inquest into Tanya Day's death in custody told a police officer failed to adequately monitor the Yota Yota woman under his care. The Defence Force seeks to double the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in its ranks in a bid to close the gap. A scathing review of three Victorian youth prisons has found children and young people are being damaged rather than rehabilitated through excessive isolation, which is unlawful, wrong, and incompatible with human rights law. Victorian Ombudsman Deborah Glass inspected Port Phillips Prison, Malmesbury Youth Justice Precinct and Secure Welfare Services earlier this year and found children and young people were often separated for weeks at a time, even where there was little or no ongoing risk to others. Ombudsman Glass says, in addition, an examination of internal records at the facilities showed Indigenous prisoners were more likely to be held in solitary confinement than their non-Indigenous counterparts.
First of all, we know that Aboriginal kids are disproportionately in our youth justice and prison facilities, as they're disproportionately in child protection and the care of the state, which is disturbing enough in itself. But even taking into account the already disproportionate nature, they were even more subject to isolation practices in Malmesbury than other kids. Now, that's got to be a particular concern. We've had recommendations going back decades, you know, to the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody that talk about the extreme anxiety suffered by Aboriginal people when they're isolated. So we really need to be worried about that.
A Victorian police officer who checked on Yota Yota woman, Tanya Day, while she was in custody, has told the inquest he didn't enter her cell because she was lying in an undignifying position for a lady. This week, the court has heard from the police officer on duty in Castlemaine Police cells when Ms. Day was brought to sober up in December 2017. The grandmother died of a brain hemorrhage caused by a fall in the cell 17 days later. Despite being instructed to check and rouse Ms. Day every half hour, Senior Constable Danny Walters only checked on her from outside the cell every 40 minutes and via CCTV every 20 minutes. Senior Constable Walters told the inquest he did not enter the cell to preserve Ms. Day's privacy and dignity. Counsel for the Day family have argued that the level of care and supervision was criminally negligent, a claim rejected by the police. Traditional owners from the top end and their supporters launched a national movement in Sydney last night to fight against fracking on their country. Australian gas giant Origin Energy has been given approval to frack for gas in the Beetaloo Basin on Jingo Country, 600 kilometres south of Darwin. But traditional owners say they were misled by the company during consultations in 2004, claiming Origin did not properly explain the risks associated with controversial gas extraction methods. Tyrone Foster from the Jingli and Arente people and Stuart Nugget, a traditional owner, explained how they were misled.
We got to try find that balance where to explain to them where they understand, you know, because the western side comes with these big words and we don't understand. We just go, yeah, like agree to disagree, you know what I mean?
Families back home must, you know, like the money companies coming in there and just telling them to sign this and sign that, you know, and they don't know what the effect that do to country.
SEED, an Indigenous youth climate activist group, had already started campaigning against the fracking. SEED's campaigner, Nicole Hutton, echoes traditional owners' concerns.
It's overwhelmingly obvious that people don't want fracking in the Northern Territory. Traditional owners don't want it. So it's time that these companies start listening to people.
The Australian Defence Force is looking to double the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in its ranks in a bid to close the gap. It's part of a larger move to improve the Defence Force's Indigenous policy across the sector. The move was received with mixed reactions because of the complex history of Indigenous participation in the Defence Force. NITV's Nakari Thorpe reports.
Lorraine Hatton is a military veteran, having served 2 decades in the armed forces and pioneering female service. As one of the first Aboriginal women to contribute to war efforts in Afghanistan, she found the army a place of acceptance.
I went from a family of 10 siblings to a family of 1,000. I just felt that defence was one of the first equal employment opportunity employers for First Australians.
She's part of a growing legacy the Australian Defence Force is hoping to build on. Flight Lieutenant Crystal Perkins is helping them to achieve this. She's in the Royal Australian Air Force, brought on as a diversity and inclusion officer to help promote Indigenous culture.
We as Aboriginal people have a fundamental reason for protecting our country, and that is something which we take with pride and with all seriousness.
Almost 3% of the Defence Force is made up of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander personnel, and the ADF wants to increase this to 5%, or about 4,800, by 2025. Building on its initiatives through its community assistance programs and regional focused surveillance units that support and employ Indigenous recruits and where Indigenous knowledge is key.
This whole idea of history and where does the history and the stories of the relationship between the Defence Force and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, unpacking that, the good, the bad, the ugly, and thinking about what does that mean for who they are today.
Lorraine Hatton, a real-life example of those possibilities.
That was NITV's Nakari Thorpe. A Uniting Care Australia report says more government resources and early intervention are needed to address the number of Australian kids entering out-of-home care. The organisation recommends strengthening the community networks around children living in out-of-home care, which include those living with other carers, residential care, group homes, or independently. The report's author, Dr. Robin Seth Purdy, says the current level of resources is inadequate, but there are no simple answers about the model of care required.
These approaches should focus very strongly on the rights of the child, the voice of the child, and providing a pervasive therapeutic environment in which children's needs can be individually assessed.
There are currently almost 48,000 children in out-of-home care in Australia. Australia's permanent migration intake has dropped to its lowest level in a decade. Around 160,000 visas were granted under the Permanent Migration Program in 2018-19, which is nearly 30,000 people fewer than the annual migration cap of 190,000. About 70% of the places were filled by skilled workers. Immigration Minister David Coleman says the program also delivered nearly 9,000 places under the regional sponsored migration scheme, up by around 44% from the previous year.
It's always, of course, our first preference to fill available jobs with locals, but there are some occasions when that's not possible, and that's when we can use the migration system to help fill those gaps.
Joe, we are reviewing.
And overseas, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has promised he would never delay Britain's exit from the European Union due on October 31. The comments come after what was in effect an election campaign speech at a police training centre in northern England, and on the same day, Mr. Johnson's younger brother, Joe Johnson, quit the government, citing the national interest. Mr. Johnson paid tribute to his brother's work as a junior minister, but said they disagreed on the question of whether to leave the EU.
Joe doesn't agree with me about the European Union because it's an issue that obviously divides families and divides everybody.
And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is vowing to crack down on perpetrators of violence against women after thousands of protesters gathered in Cape Town this week demanding the government address the issue. There has been widespread outrage in South Africa over the last week following reports of several women being raped and murdered. Mr. Ramaphosa promised various reforms but stopped short of declaring a state of emergency, one of the demands of demonstrators who have clashed with police outside the convention center where the World Economic Forum on Africa is underway.
We are reviewing laws on domestic violence and sexual offenses to prioritize the needs and interests of survivors.
Huge parts of northern New South Wales and southern Queensland have been placed under a total fire ban, with hot and windy conditions fueling the threat. People in the far north coast, Greater Hunter, Central Ranges, New England, Northern Slopes and northwestern regions of New South Wales are barred from lighting fires in the open. In Queensland, severe to extreme fire warnings have been issued for southern, southeast and central Queensland, with one home destroyed in a fast-moving grass fire near Mariba in far north Queensland. The former commissioner of the Queensland Fire Service, Lee Johnson, says the conditions are unusual for this time of year.
This is a result of long-term drought, a very dry winter. Vegetation, i.e. the fuel, is extremely dry, and a combination of hot northwesterly winds coming through both southern Queensland and northern New South Wales result in fire danger ratings of extreme to severe in many parts.
And now a look at the weather. Perth, a sunny day, 20. Adelaide, showers and windy, a top of 14. Melbourne, showers, local hail and thunder, 15. Hobart, rain with possible heavy falls, 12. Albury-Wodonga, light rain, 12. Canberra, showers, 19. Wollongong, becoming windy and partly cloudy, 24. Sydney, much the same, but a top of 28. Newcastle, becoming windy, partly cloudy, but 30 degrees. Brisbane, a sunny day, 34 degrees. Townsville, sunny and 26, Cairns, sunny 29, Alice Springs, sunny 17, Darwin, a mostly sunny day, 31 degrees, and the Torres Strait Islands, mostly sunny and a top of 27. And that's all the news. Stay tuned, we'll be back with an update on sport.
sbs.com.au